Good morning. One Saturday, pretty long ago as you'll be able to figure out, a couple was driving in Waco, Texas. The wife, Deborah, suddenly yells to GK, her husband, GK, turn the car around. There was a car back there, that used car lot I want to go back and look at. Now, GK had been married for 8 years. He knew that these are not minor U-turns that are talked about. He has to take them rather seriously. And so with a little minor amount of trying not to, he finally gives in, turns around. And she points out the car lot, and she points to a gray Pontiac station wagon. You see, GK hadn't even noticed the parking lot, but she had already picked out the car. It was obvious that she had fallen in love with this vehicle immediately. They got out, looked at it, kicked the tires, so to say. It seemed to be in good condition. The mileage was low, and the price was reasonable, but the dealership was closed. It was a Saturday evening, so Deborah said, "Well, let's come back on first thing Monday morning." And GK said, "Let's see." You see, Deborah was in the market for a new second car, but GK was not. The old red Vega was good enough for GK. Deborah had driven it just after graduating from college, and he had driven it since then. He had began listing all the reasons as to why they didn't need another car. The strongest argument he made was that the Vega still ran well. Sure, the muffler's loud and about to fall off. And yeah, that's right, honey, the air conditioning doesn't work in the 108-degree summer heat. The radio doesn't work, but I'm the one who drives it, so that's all right with me. Well, yes, honey, it's hard to start on cold mornings, I know. But just don't drive the car. You don't have to drive that. Drive the newer car. Yes, you do have to pump the brakes whenever you have to come to a stop sign sometimes, but I'll get to work on that. I'll try to do something on that, but I'll keep driving it because I've grown close to that car. And we really can't afford a new Pontiac station wagon. And then the zinger comes. "Yes, honey," she said, "but the baby is on the way." Deborah was pregnant at this point. "And we need a dependable second car in case the baby needs to go out in an emergency situation." Somehow or other, I don't know how, but GK stopped the asking for it for the moment. He suppressed the project for the moment. They left the car lot that night, and they didn't go back Monday morning. But for the next 2 or 3 weeks, every now and then, Deborah would drop those little hints. Some of you may know what I'm talking about. "That sure was a nice car. GK, I'm pretty sure that car had our name on it. I drove by the car lot today, and guess what? It's still there." And one day the truth came out that she had actually stopped already and talked to the dealer. GK knew that he had a problem on his hand. One day at the end of lunch, Deborah said, "We got some extra time. How about we go test drive that car?" So he finally gave in. They went and they drove it, and she liked it more, and guess what? He started liking it. It was a little neat car, and when he knew things had heated up to a fever pitch, he suddenly decided, "You know what? We need to start car shopping." And so he came up with comparison shopping. We need to go look at all the other cars and get the best deal. And this was the only car they had looked at, so she said yes, but she could tell her heart wasn't in it. GK read the classified ads, and they would go and they would test drive different cars, but the gray Pontiac station wagon was still at the top of Deborah's list. And so after much looking and much long-suffering on Deborah's part, finally 3 or 4 weeks later, they finally went in and bought that station wagon. It took over 9 weeks to buy, but Deborah would have bought it that first day. You know the sad part about all this? She was right from the very beginning. They found no better buy, and every now and then GK says to her, "Deb, do you mind if I drive the Pontiac today? It's a nice little car. I love the way it handles, and I'm so glad that we bought it." Deborah and GK learned early on in their relationship that they are different personalities. In many ways, they are the exact opposites of each other. She's highly intuitive, spontaneous. She's quite the risk taker. He is cautious, analytical, play it safe type. He approaches things like you'd expect an academic problem to be looked at. He doesn't rush in. She makes up her mind rather quickly. She's in touch with her emotions and knows exactly what she wants. It takes GK a few days to realize that he even wants anything at all, let alone what it is. He has to examine all the options and wear out the matter in his mind before he can commit to it with his heart. Deborah is ready to go to a restaurant that evening, go over to someone's house just like that. GK has the plan to be spontaneous. How about next Thursday we get together? Or that he has to put it on his calendar. Be spontaneous. Have a fun day today. And then he's able to do it. Not Deborah. She knew that she was going to marry GK 6 months before he figured it out. And aren't they irritating, those intuitive, spontaneous people? They're always out ahead and of us, cautious, analytical types. And I say all this to bring us to our reading today, Matthew 14. This is immediately after Jesus has fed the 5,000. Starting in verse 22, immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It's a ghost," and they cried out in fear. Now here's part of our first disconnect with the text that we struggle with. Imagine a close friend, all right, that you have, that you're close to. Imagine seeing them walking on water, similar to someone flying or floating in midair with no aid. Can we really imagine that happening? Like a person getting up out of a casket at a funeral, our minds just would not comprehend that happening. We're hard on the disciples, but we need to ask the true question, would we actually do anything different? Verse 27, but immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." Don't be afraid. I would argue that that in that moment is not easy to do with all that's going on. I think the disciples actually needed this assurance. But there's one who seems to overcome fear rather quickly. Verse 28, Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. So I want to ask you guys today, who are you in this story? There's two possibilities. You could be the rest of the disciples who are staying in the boat, or are you Peter who gets out of the boat? Which one are you? Which one do you think you are? If we're honest, I think we all probably struggle not to be the disciples who stay in the boat. I know without a question that I struggle to not be with the disciples in the boat, holding on to the mast or whatever I can grab a hold of for dear life because of all the storm that's going on. But let's focus on Peter, the one willing to follow Jesus. Would it be fair to say in this instance that we want to be like Peter, willing to get out of the boat? The risk taker, always ready to pull a U-turn in the middle of the road, Peter ready to get out of the boat and step out into the unknown. Drawn to embrace a new experience immediately, I think drawn to Jesus. "Lord, if it is you, bid me to come to you on the water." The others are back on the boat analyzing the situation, saying, "Peter, you're crazy. Get back in the boat." But out there in the darkness, in the middle of the waves, the wind, the thunder and lightning that are going on, Peter, with eager resolve on his face, steps down into the swirling foam. And in that moment, Matthew gives us a picture of faith. Matthew gives us the early church and us this morning a kind of crazy picture of faith. Maybe a faith that we don't always imagine when we think of faith. It is faith not as we often think of it, not as something safe and secure and cautious, but here faith is willing to risk and to move out. But you say, risk to a lot of people is a word for the stock market. It's a word for corporate mergers and acquisitions, the high rollers. It's a word for space shuttle launchings, experimental surgeries. That's where risk is, not in my ordinary everyday life. We think we don't need to risk when it comes to faith. I'm doing all that I can to minimize the risk in my home, in my business, and in my faith. We honestly are in that area. In truth, I think we come to church saying, I want to come to church and I want to seek a haven of rest, a risk-free zone, a place of comfort and reassurance where I can find salvation. After all, doesn't salvation mean to be saved? And isn't that somehow related to being safe? Safe in the boat? Having certainty? A place where I can be saved from the rest of the world. And to a point, the church does that. But it does it so that we can build ourselves up towards action of going out again. Wilbur Ries described that risk-free faith when he wrote these words. I would like to buy $3 worth of God, please. Not enough to explode my soul or disturb my sleep, but just enough to equate to a cup of warm milk or a snooze in the sunshine. I don't want enough of him to make me love a person who has a different background than me, or to work alongside someone who is unlike me. No, I want ecstasy, not transformation. I want warmth of the womb, not a new birth. I want a pound of eternal in a paper bag. I would like to buy just $3 worth of God, please. That's it, isn't it, though? We want faith to be safe. We want God to be the comforter, the encourager, the reassurer. And God knows that we need all those things, but too often we want the cup of warm milk and the nap in the sunshine. Sometimes we don't want enough of God to make us nervous, to challenge our prejudices, to actually make us do something different than what we were already doing, to change us and to move us on to a new stage of faith, a growing stage of faith. No, we want a comfortable God. It is within us to stay clutched in the beam there in the boat, with God safe at a distance. But Matthew holds up a different picture for us. Peter and the disciples are on the storm-tossed sea, and Peter stepping out over the edge into the water with the crazy U-turn in the middle of the road going on. Lord, bid me come to you on the water. And Jesus answered, come. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water to Jesus. And that tends to make us very nervous, if we're honest. Peter is a controversial figure. We don't quite know what to do with this man. How many times does he stick his foot in his mouth, really? He says things that we just think, wow, Peter, why would you say that? We think, Peter, you're impulsive. You leap before you look. You're reckless. You're a show-off. You act without thinking. And I want to suggest to you this morning that faith sometimes looks and is this way of a step of faith. You don't know that the next step is there until you experience it. Faith sometimes looks foolish, irresponsible to those for whom faith is cautious and analytical. The risk-free comfort zone, the $3 of God, please. You see, Peter's a man of the sea. We've got to realize this. He knows you can float a boat in the sea, you can catch fish in the sea, but you can't walk on the sea. He knows that, and yet Peter here has one word to act upon, the word, come. Jesus says, come to me. He's willing to let go and to risk because he is drawn to Jesus. And I don't think he's showboating. I think he wants more of this one who teaches, who heals, and who loves him, who still mystifies him. I think he wants more than just $3 worth of God. And Peter's joined by the centuries of followers of Christ, the martyrs, who at one point or another have risked, just like Peter here. Abraham, who packed his bags and moved 500 miles, not knowing for sure where he was going. Or Moses, who, after so many objections, finally stands in the presence of the great Pharaoh of Egypt. Or Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, who is told, they will not listen to your message. It will not be popular. Paul and Augustine. Luther and Martin Luther King Jr., all of them together took a risk at some point in their life, stepping out at one time or another, willing to be open and vulnerable. So it is for you and me this morning to believe in the transforming power of Christ in a day of skepticism and materialism is to be called foolish, naive, shallow-minded idealists. C.S. Lewis once said of himself, "I am a safety-first creature. I'm cautious and careful. But I am sure, if I am sure of anything, I am sure that Jesus' teaching was never meant to confirm my preference for safety and investments of safe investments and limited liabilities." There's no safe investment, Lewis says. To have faith, to love it all, is to make ourselves vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will certainly be wrung out, if not broken. But you see, the fear of risk often paralyzes us into doing nothing. And we miss the vision of faith and the richness of God that He offers us in following Him. Jesus says elsewhere in the Gospels that, "For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." So how about you this morning? Are you cautious and analytical, or are you, Peter, willing to step out of the boat? Are there things going on in your life that you need to say, "You know what, I need to step up. I need to step out of on faith of doing this because I know it's what God wants me to do"? Is it perhaps a needed relationship that you need to make right? Are you being called to risk your relationship with God, to risk coming to faith in Christ, moving away from that $3 worth of Jesus into a God of more than worth it, giving more of yourself? Is ours a God of $3, or is God who calls us into faith to be transformed, to be deepened, to grow into prayer and meditation, in study and fellowship? Where are we being called to risk? For the church at large, I think it means that we're going to have to be willing to talk to one another and be honest with one another. And one more thing, let's kind of finish this story. Let's all be prepared for what follows whenever we take that step of faith like Peter, step out of the boat. Because we've heard the rest of the story. When we desire to have more of God, to ask God to take ourselves, we finish the story in verse 30. "But when he," that is Peter, "saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, 'Lord, save me.' Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying, 'O you of little faith, why did you doubt?' And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly you are the Son of God.'" Why did he waver and go in two different directions at the same time? Why did he want to follow Jesus but then worry about the worries of life? In Matthew's picture here, doubt becomes a part of the faith experience itself. Peter, the man of risk, becomes also Peter, the man of doubt and hesitation. We see the struggle that we oftentimes come through ourselves of, we want to follow God, we get a vision of following God, and then we start looking away. He hesitates because he takes his eyes off of Jesus. He looks at the wind, his inadequacies take over, and he starts to go under. And that is sure to happen to us as well when we take our eyes off of God. That's where we start to sink in our walk, is when we take our eyes off of Jesus and what he wants. That faltering is itself a part of the created risk-taking that faith calls us to, where faith is better understood as a process rather than an object that we can have. We don't have faith, we use faith. Frederick Buchner said that faith is ongoing and off again rather than once for all. It's that decision that you have to make daily. Faith is not always being sure of where you're going, but going there anyway. Faith is a commitment that we renew each day and at each moment. Do I choose God or do I choose self? The moments of uncertainty and inadequacy will come. Being called by Jesus to come is being called to grow, to be deepened in our faith, to be stretched and be transformed, to lose our lives for the sake of His kingdom. Jesus at once stretches out his hand and catches Peter once he calls out to him. He lifts him up and restores him. And when we get into the boat, the wind ceases, and those who are in the boat worship Jesus. Matthew and those who are in the boat confess, truly you are the Son of God. The good news of the gospel this morning is simply this. In all of life, filled with storms and fears and a world of darkness, God is present and bids us come. He says, take heart, it is I. Have no fear. God bids us to come like he does with Peter, to step out on faith. He bids us to no longer settle for a $3 worth of God, a pound of eternity in a brown paper bag, but rather come and be fully transformed. When we falter, God is there, always there to catch us, to pull us back up out of the water whenever we take our eyes off of him. But he wants us to focus on him. So where are we this morning? Are we on the periphery of faith, the outer borders of faith, cautious and analytical? Are we keeping God at arm's length, saying, I just want a little bit of you? Are we examining all the options and comparison shopping and on and on and on before we finally decide that we can trust in God? Is ours a safe and entertaining God Sunday after Sunday? Is ours an intellectual God, nice to talk about, but not much else really that is involved in our life? Or is God a God calling us to be transformed, who bids us to make a U-turn in the middle of the road? What does God want of you today? Does God want you to come to him, to be baptized for the first time, or for the prayers of the church to be made right, to get back on track with following God, to refocus your vision? If you have any of these needs, we can pray for you, we can help you. If you come, tell me during this next song as we stand and as we sing.